Hey, welcome to On Mic with me, Jordan Rich, where we celebrate together the performance arts, voiceover, acting, directing, and of course, music. And today's guest is a supernova, someone I met years back doing my late night radio show. His soaring talent nearly blew the studio door off its hinges that night. He's the inimitable Ellis Hall, a Ray Charles protege, the voice of Tower of Power. Ellis has done it all. From being a California raisin to playing huge stadium-sized symphony concerts to theater and film, there's enough energy to power a large metropolitan city. And Ellis Hall makes everyone around him feel the love. Blind since his youth, Ellis has this multi-octave vocal range that defies logic in my mind. And he's a master of so many instruments I can't begin to count. He often calls me from his home studio where he's composing new music and adding the Ellis Hall touch to classics. Hey, you want some real proof? Here's the master, the ambassador of soul at work. My pleasure to welcome my friend, brother Ellis Hall, to the podcast. There's no question that you've earned the title Ambassador of Soul, Mr. Hall. I'm going to call you the King of Soul these days. How are you?
Hey.
There you go.
How are you, sir? What a joy to be back with you again. Yes.
What I love about interviewing Ellis is that half the time he sings to me and sings about me. So
that's of course. Somebody better do it, doggone it.
So but, I'm thrilled to just say at this point that you're as hot as a meteor right now. Things are really happening for you, aren't they?
Oh, you know, and I never take any of it, be the peaks or the valleys. I never take it for granted. The center is the truth that lives within. And I am the vessel. I have to take care of that truth. Come on now.
Whether it's the concerts that you're doing all over the world, whether it's the albums, whether it's merging your talents with amazing personalities, you just have so much going on. And, of course, it helps to have a beautiful lady in your life that you have now.
You know, let's be real. I call her wifeager. Wife and manager, absolutely, and she keeps it humming. I need all the help I can get, but you know, us doing, for instance, brother, we went to Australia in April, last April, and they've asked us to come back again in late March, and we're honorary Aussies now. They didn't know, or I didn't think they knew, who we were when we went down there. 15,000 screaming folks for each performance we did. Was a triple chakalaka. Chakalaka in Ellis language is joyous. Now, one of our sponsors said, you realize, Ellis, because the world is turned around down there, you have to say chakalaka backwards. Oh, yeah, I'd like kalakacha.
Yeah, it's where the toilets were run and the sinks and all that. Everything runs backwards there. So you might as well
everything runs backwards. That's hilarious. Right. But, you know, doing these concerts, for instance, six sold-out shows in Naples, Florida, a soul celebration from the Ambassador of Soul. Hold it inside and you could hurt yourself. Don't do it.
I've got to tell people that Ellis and I have known each other now for several years, and I've had him as a guest many times. But to see you do what you do in front of an audience the size of, well, let's put it this way, 4th of July, the Esplanade in Boston, which is about a 500,000-person audience, to see you just come alive and to see the audience go with you.
Yes.
You've been doing these symphonic presentations for many years now, haven't you?
Yes, sir. Since, essentially, my God, Brother Jordan, since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been a journey. And it never gets old. Or whether we're doing festivals or these symphonies with the 81-piece orchestras or even in the studio working on something we just licensed for the United Nations for the fight against human trafficking. Please, Lord, eradication in our time. You know, those things are all part of the territory of me bringing, I pray, that soulful light to the world.
Let's talk a little bit about your youth and childhood and growing up in the South, and then, of course, ultimately coming to Boston. We'll explain why. But you did all this and got into music despite the fact that you had to deal with congenital glaucoma, which ultimately took your sight. What was that connection to music? How early on in your life did that occur for you?
Well, let me see. How can I describe? At 1 year old, they realized I had congenital glaucoma because there wasn't silver nitrate put in my eyes in the 50s in a black hospital in Georgia. So they figured I'd better move up to Boston. My parents had the foresight to do that and go to the finest school I consider in the world, Perkins School for the Blind, which we're doing a show in May for them. Hallelujah. Another one. And, you know, I started out kind of slight with my music, meaning I wasn't really into it, although they said in third grade, you know, I started playing piano, and my mom swears I came out of the womb dancing and singing. So I said, that must have hurt. But at 14, sneaking into a club, and yes, she found out later, that I was looking at the faces of the band, not the audience, but the band, as they were whipping the audience into shape. And that was a light going on in my head for me. So taking to these instruments, drums, basses, guitars, keys, whatever it took, vocals. And let me tell you, to this day, I believe the drums and bass, if you're doing groove, are the cake. Mm. And everything else is the icing. If your cake ain't right, doesn't matter what kind of icing.
Anybody hold you down? I'm thinking about Henry Santos, your piano teacher, as you've talked about him. And he mentioned, you know, no matter what he did, there would always be a time and a lesson when Ellis would just riff and have to be Ellis,
yes,
right?
Yes, I would. Yes, and he would also have me go and get my bass throughout our lessons. And we'd play bass and piano, some of those old jazz charts.
There's so many things we could talk about, but I didn't know this, and I did a lot of research in the latest incarnation here of you. I didn't realize that Milt Jackson, who, for those who know anything about jazz, is a legend with the vibraphone, that Milt Jackson saw you in action and had you play some gigs with him or local gigs?
He didn't see me in action. They suggested a bass player, and at 17, he called me.
Holy
and
shit.
He wanted to take me on the road with him. So, obviously, I must have passed the mustard. My mom said, no, you're going to finish school.
Wow.
So, that's what I did, obviously. But every time he came to town, he called me, apparently, as one of his favorite bass players to play with. You know, and to this day, how honored and how ironic that he and Ray Charles and I had something in common, because Ray worked with him, too.
And that brings me to my next question, which is the Ray Charles connection, which is so beautiful a story. Poignant, too, because Ray passed away shortly after you guys kind of get together.
Yes.
But tell me about that, because you have done tributes to Ray that have just blown the roofs off of stadium and other locales. Tell me about the Ray Charles connection.
The first thing is Ray, he saw me in 2001 because, you know, people will tell you they're going to bring artists to parties. And sometimes it happens, sometimes not. This time it did. And the song that he walked in on was I Can See Clearly Now, the Blind Man's Theme Song. So that being said, he saw me. He had me come off the stage, practically killing ourselves, trying to get to him. He gave me a hug. He said, I gave him a CD. I gave him a hug. And he gave, the next day, he called me and said, who are you? Nobody didn't tell me about you. But he had me sign on to his label, not for imitation, not for emulation, but the soul celebration. That's what he recognized. Because Mom taught me very early that I wasn't anybody else, no contemporary of Stevie, you know, or no imitating Stevie. I was one of his contemporaries. So, you know, whatever it took to make the music and sing my own soul, you know, that's and right. Working with Papa Ray, as I got to call him, was an experience. You know, he was serious about his music, as I am, thank you, Lord. And also, on top of that, if you weren't doing what he felt was right, and as a master, he had to say what he felt was right, he would take you to task. And I got to say, he never took me to task, so obviously I must have been doing something. We would get into arguments about certain mixes and things like that, but that's what it is, you know, in a family ship, you're going to have some stuff. Okay, no, that note's not right. Play it. Hot damn it, you got to play it right. Yes, sir.
Of course. In terms of the movie Ray, weren't you involved in that particular production, which was an Academy Award-winning film, somebody who really had expertise in the area of Ray Charles?
Yeah, and how to folks say online that I taught Jamie how to Ray. Jamie did his research, earned that serious Oscar, but you can see Jamie and I cutting up on the set of Ray, and he's imitating Ray and rocking back and forth as I'm singing to him, Georgia. That's got millions of views, so hopefully those of you out there will go and make it millions more.
Georgia. Georgia.
So many things that we've talked about in the past that I want to sort of reintroduce to this podcast world. One of them, of course, is the music that you've written for, I'm going to call them special occasions, meaningful moments, whether they be tributes or commemorations or music to heal. That's a big part of what you do, isn't it?
Absolutely. And in fact, the last time I went to Australia in November, they found out that one of the songs I sang was one of Nelson's favorite songs. It's a tune I wrote called Why Should I Care? And the chorus is, life won't pass unaware when we choose simply not to care. The trials of this world we all share. And the bottom line, that's what it is. We're in this together, you know. The connection is always there. We're in this, whether we want to realize it or not. So that, and again, writing something for the United Nations for the eradication of human trafficking, or working with this other thing called Rock Against Trafficking, which features Sting songs, and I'm singing Let Your Soul Be Your Pilot and Set Them Free. How ironic. And, you know, just whatever it takes to contribute this truth inside of me, which, again, I said earlier, I'm the vessel, so I don't take it for granted, and I say when I play and sing, it feels like to me the gates of heaven open up and I might as well walk on through. Mm-hmm. To me, nothing to do with religion, but to do with all access of love, be it spiritual.
Well, that's what audiences feel. I'm going to speak for them all. Every single one of them, I'm going to speak for them and say, when you're in the audience at an Ellis Hall concert, you are taken away to someplace very special, and you're not going to ever forget it. I mean, I remember seeing you at Symphony Hall, Boston, of course, with the Boston Pops. The fun that you had and the fun that the orchestra was having, is that something that you noticed?
That's the fun thing. Yeah. Getting them, because they've done the Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff and all these different things, which is cool. That's the classics. But to get them to jam and get soulful and rarely get funky, that's quite a phrase that's hardly ever heard.
Indeed. I've got to also bring up the fact that it's not just the musical talent you have with instruments and composing, but that crazy five-octave voice of yours. When did you sort of realize that you could hit the notes that you hit? Was that early on?
Well, when I was early on in my career, you know, I would sing my high notes and stuff, but I didn't have a falsetto. So talk about things that you attract to you. I used to say, oh, man, I want to get a falsetto so I can reach some extra notes. Well, I woke up literally on my birthday, and I believe it was 1973, and I started, la, 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 la. And I said, whoa, I could sing those notes. So I started, and I didn't use it a lot publicly until later on, mm-hmm. but every time I got the chance, I would sneak a note in there. People say, where'd that come from?
I'm going to call them the special effects masters. Could just dream them up, but you make them happen really on stage, live. It's the most amazing thing when you've got the audience with you, and then you just go for one of those ridiculous notes. It blows everybody away.
So you had to squeeze something to get on up there. Come on.
You know, you mentioned Tower of Power, Ellis, and you and I had a conversation off air, off podcast, about the fact that Tower of Power is absolutely in line for the Hall of Fame, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they should have been there years ago.
They should have been there.
We're going to help you do that, but talk a little bit about that organization, that group, because, man, if you listen to their stuff today and you're part of that, it's as contemporary sounding and as real and sharp and cool as it was back then.
Oh, my God. Well, this being 2018, after 50 years still funkin' and still doing the soul celebration as they should, and to once you're a Tower Power member, you are there forever. God bless him, Mr. Rick Stevens, who sang on You're Still a Young Man and Down to the Nightclub. He just passed recently, but he'll always be there, solid as can be. And, you know, the fact that I got to celebrate although it was only on one album, but to celebrate with them and power them through, no pun intended, all sorts of things. It was, and I just sat in with them, and I call mm-hmm. it my music alma mater. I sat in with them recently, and we had a blast.
Cool. You have an attitude of let's live in this wonderful moment and make everything happy. But of course, you must get asked this a lot. What are your goals for the new year, for the future couple of years musically? I mean, having done so much, is there a particular nugget out there that you'd like to grab?
Yes, the nugget is I want to celebrate with some of the artists who helped to keep things alive. On the hip-hop side, I want to work with Chance the Rapper, who's just brilliant. I want to work with Bruno Mars, who has his brilliance shining. Other people who just want to help keep the soul alive. They can do the hip-hop, and I'll do the hooks or whatever it takes to just celebrate this thing going forward, a light and sometimes seemingly a way to cloudy world. So, I mean, I want to, and, you know, lift other kids up along the way. That helps to do. I'm recently, I'm getting involved with doing some shows for some kids. And I'm so excited. Every time I get to do it, for be it high school kids, college kids, even 90-year-old kids, you know, whatever it takes to make that happen and let them celebrate.
Isn't it funny that kids, really little kids, would know you from movies and cartoons and commercials, the California Raisin or Chicken Run or Shrek 2, and a whole other generation of wonderful big kids know you as the concert
man. And my granddaughter sings some of like Chicken Run, Fly. It's so funny to hear it because That stuff just follows you. You know, the California raisins heard it through the grapevine, and whatever it takes, you know, to be a singing zebra in Lion King 2, you know, once they recognize what I've done, they say, oh, my God, we're going to have an Ellis weekend of movies. Like Catch Me If You Can.
But what I really urge people to do, and they can go to ellishall.com, is to try to catch a performance live. And I think I'd like to have you sort of comment on this before we wrap up here. The idea of a live performance, we know what you get out of it. We know what audiences get out of it. So many people are insulated in their little cocoons watching videos or whatever when they should get out to see live music, eh?
They should. And I encourage them. People ask me all the time what I prefer, live or studio. It all is part of that tapestry that I get to weave. A live concert, nothing like having that instant reaction from the audience. But the studio has a thing, you know, where you're going to hear it eventually, but you know if it's truthful within yourself, it doesn't matter who's watching. 1 or 100,000. Or nobody, because when I play for myself, and it comes from the inside to go out to who's listening.
Such a great great piece of life-living philosophy that you always seem to share with me. One more additional thing. I was reading in your bios, and there are some stellar ones out there online. One of them says that you were one of those street corner kids who sang doo-wop.
I did. And, you know, that's the funny thing. Even before I had my like connection of say, hey, that's what I'm supposed to do. When I was about 8 or 9 years old, I was standing out on a corner and people were throwing things. I thought at first they were mad till I realized I got enough to money. It was money they were throwing. I had enough to buy chips and soda. So, yeah, a kid's dream.
Oh, man. So you're out there singing the great doo-wop hits, and they're chucking dimes, quarters, and other
dimes,
stuff.
And quarters, and even some dollar bills. Hey. And my mom said, boy, where'd you get all that money? And I said, Mom, they were throwing it. And she said, don't you lie to me, boy. And she found out because she happened to sneak around and saw me singing, like, There Goes My Baby by the Drifters and Blue Moon by the Marcells and things like that. They saw me singing it and said, whoa, you know. My boy got some talent. This was way before, obviously, Star Search and anything else. So,
well, I'm glad that you were on that corner because that was just one more step in the evolution of you as a performer. And, boy, you're not even hitting your stride yet, my friend. Let me tell you.
I feel like I'm just beginning. 50 years, over 50 years professionally in the business and feel like I'm just getting started. And with friends / family ship like you, you know, to help keep, one, the music vibe alive through people like us, I can't commend you enough. You know, that's why I had to help you write your own theme.
Which sounds like what again?
Ooh, Jordan Rich. I don't know if I could say the station, though. I said,
you know,
W. Uh-huh.
You can say it. I'm still there.
WBZ.
Oh, that brings joy to my heart. Hey, man, you're the best. I wish you phenomenal success and love. You know we're thrilled to hear about you back here in Boston, and we want you back as soon as we can.
We're coming, and we owe you a squeeze. And when we get to Boston in May, you'll be one of the first people I call, I swear.
I'll see you then, my friend.
And looking forward to squeezing Miss Roberta as well. God bless you.
Not too much squeezing.
No.
Ellis Hall, man, you're the best. Take care.
You too, brother. God bless.
For more, visit ellishall.com. Certainly try to catch this amazing performer live when he comes to town. You will be hooked. You've been listening to On Mic with Jordan Rich, a podcast produced by chartproductions.com. Subscribe, download, rate, and review us on all major platforms, including Apple. I thank you, I love you, and I appreciate you listening. Have a super day.
Woke up this morning, kissed my wife goodbye under clear blue skies. Rode off to work with feelings of everything right. Is there a heaven? Seems we all ask why when the dark arrives. Are we just dreamers, victims of change when the die is cast? And I need to face, will I recognize how to win this race? from the inside. Through the dust of doubt, going down, 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 to get up and out from the inside. Raining deadline fear, time is running out, message loud and clear from the inside. They say the answer's in the wind that blows, bending willows know. But in the silence, truthfully, nobody knows. Deer in the headlights, sensory overload from the fire glow. Who could imagine how this would go? Come the morning sun. To be afraid, am I not alone? Will it be okay? From the inside, through the